Hey, I'm Mike Still, and I play Mark Hard on the show Hard Nation over on Earwolf. And I want to tell you about a new Howl original called The Layman. It's hosted by the absolutely most funniest person in the universe, John Gabris. John loves science. We all know this. But you and I know it's also kind of difficult to understand, right? Who gets science? So in this series, Gabris goes to the experts, doctors exploring the frontiers of the mind, outer space, and more, and he asks them to break it down in terms that we can all understand and ask the most important question of all. How is this stuff going to help me? Number one. So here's episode one of The Layman. To hear the series each week, go to howl.fm. You can use promo code Layman, L-A-Y-M-A-N, to get 1 month for free. Enjoy John Gabris, The Layman.
What's up, guys? I'm John Gabris. You can, of course, call me Gabris. I had like five Jonathans in my junior high, and it's stuck since. You might know me from TV or from the Comedy Bang Bang podcast, or maybe even my own podcast, High and Mighty. What you might not know about me is that I've always been obsessed with science. It was one of the subjects I was good at. And then as I got older, I thought I wanted to be an FBI agent, so I started studying psychology and reading up on profiling. Silence of the Lambs truly affected me, I'm assuming. You might be surprised to hear that I'm not an FBI agent, and I'm actually now a podcast host. That doesn't mean I'm still not obsessed with science. I mean, I used to play high school football. I don't play anymore, but I still watch the Giants every Sunday. So here I am, excited about science. I get the opportunity to talk to scientists about their fields. Rarely do you get, in your mid-30s, an opportunity to learn anything anymore. So I'm super excited about that. And in all honesty, hopefully some of these scientific facts I learned can help me solve some problems of my own. Maybe I can learn how to focus up and actually complete something for once in my life. Let's be honest, I'm in it to help myself here. So to start off this show with this first episode, I went down to Orange County, which is about an hour south of Los Angeles. There, I met with a husband and wife scientist team. I know, there it is. There's the sitcom right there. They've worked together for years. Keith brews beers and Laura writes romance novels. Now, these are the kind of scientists that I can understand. This is your host, the layman himself, John Gabris, and I am in the lovely home of a married couple who are both scientists. Yeah, you think actors have it rough marrying another actor? We have scientists married to one another, Dr. Lauren Billings-Lurs and Dr. Keith Lurs. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Absolutely.
Of course.
I'm so excited. They have children and puppies, and they're also doctors, so they legitimately are more busy than me. Each of you are in a different field or a similar field of science. Is there some sort of overlap? Why don't you talk to me a little bit about, A, which one it is and how if they relate at all?
Okay, so this is Lauren. I'm actually
Lauren
not...
is the woman.
I am the woman, yes.
My voice is a little higher.
I'm so used to doing that because I'm a co-author.
Right.
So I'm actually not currently doing active research. I got my PhD in neuroscience, so brain science.
Mm-hmm. And so my training was in molecular biology and biochemistry, which sounds really fancy, but it's just really, really, really small stuff. So when I look at what she does, I think it's that brain science. It's way too complicated.
And I think the same thing about his, like, how could you ever understand what's going on at such a like nano scale?
But there is some overlap in that the brains have cells in them. All
Indeed
right.
They do.
Exactly.
And that's the end of the layman. Thank you, guys. Well, let's pack it up, Eric, and get out of here.
When I first started graduate school, our department was called psychobiology, which is a few jokes. Because there were some crazy-ass people in our department. And so...
some real psychobiologists.
They really were. And we ended up changing the department name to... neurobiology and behavior, but I think even still there were some people in some of the harder sciences, like even like physics or mathematics, but I would even go into molecular bio and biochem, who didn't really think a lot of what we did was research. And you'll definitely get that when you're talking about psychology.
Right.
A lot of psychology people like say, well, I'm a scientist, and the scientists will be like, no, you're not.
No, you're like practically puppetry major
totally,
to some scientists.
So, like, neuroscience is sort of on the line of that, where it's a lot of it is like you're studying things that are sort of hard to grasp because they're more like cognitive concepts and you're trying to find the biological plug-in for that. And
right,
I think,
it's not something you can look at under a microscope.
Right, and so I think a lot of people think that it's just going to, you're working more in the theoretical.
Yeah. But I mean, it all really goes together because you can't really do anything useful with just what I do or just what she does. You need to put sort of these different scales together to do something like, you know, make a drug for drug development.
Did you guys meet working at a large drug company?
No, we actually met back when we were grad students in an elevator.
Yeah.
So what school is this at?
UC Irvine.
UC Irvine. That makes sense as to our current location. And you guys met in an elevator? Let me hear this story. This is precious. Already.
Well, so he was working, his research was in parasitology, so he was working with parasites.
I knew it was going to be romantic.
Yeah. Actually, really nasty stuff. So yeah. We had to wear, instead of like a regular cloth lab coat, because, you know, you can get something in that and maybe you don't wash it out, we wore these, you know, sort of Tyvek paper lab coats that were disposable.
But it's academia. Nobody ever has enough money to.
So we couldn't dispose of them.
So they were disposable, but like reused as if they weren't.
Yeah. So the buttons fall off of them. So I had like different colors of lab tape to like hold together where the buttons were. And I'm in the elevator, and she was working a floor down from me, and we're headed downstairs. And so door opens, and she gets in.
And I'd had a crush on him for like a year. I used to call him my boyfriend before I even knew his name.
Oh, that is so cute. I love that. Yeah. Secret boyfriends, class boyfriend, work boyfriend.
Exactly.
And she's like, nice lab coat. And I'm not realizing I'm wearing a paper lab coat with different colors of tape on it. So I'm like, who is...
What's her deal?
What's your deal?
And I was like, God, that's the worst opening line ever.
Yeah. And then she gets out of the elevator on a different floor. And I look down after she leaves at my lab coat. And I'm like, oh... That's what she meant.
she meant it was making a joke.
Yeah.
So it was meant to be.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And so 11 years later, we found each other.
Yeah, I know, right?
Same elevator, same lap. I rode it every day.
I've been waiting for you.
That's awesome. That's a pretty solid icebreaker that you whiffed on.
I tried, man. I was like, ooh, that came out a little rough.
When you guys were first started getting together, or as the relationship developed, has science come into play at all? Did you guys end up working together, or?
I got my job at the company, the local company, and a couple of years later, he came over and started working there too. And then it was awesome because not only did we have lunch together every day, which was great because we have little.
So
kids.
You were dating, working for the
no,
same.
No, we're married.
Oh, you're married at this point.
We were married, yeah.
Not only did we have little kids, so like you can't talk about grown up things at home when you have little kids.
No. Right.
It's all absorbed with like, you know, diapers and whatnot. But also, like, he knows my projects now more than just me saying I'm working on this. You know, he doesn't have time to read all the papers that I'm reading for my postdoc. But when we're working together, we're reading the same stuff. And we did actually have a couple of collaborations between our groups.
I couldn't even imagine actually working with my wife, especially if I had to be in power, because that would upset our entire dynamic if I had to be in charge in some way. But I think working with your spouse or a loved one in a situation where you're in the same field, but you also get to go separately and do, like, you don't have to, like, it's not side by side the whole time. I feel like that is like the ideal situation where you're like, hey, we can go for lunch, we can carpool, we can do this, but when we get there, we get a few hours away from each other.
Yeah, and we weren't in the same group. We're in the same department. Right. We're both in biology.
So we work together, you know, several hours a week, but not like 8 hours a day, every day.
Yeah.
And I think it helps
awesome.
Too that
not
like
that would be bad.
No.
backpedal.
He says with terror in his eyes.
No, we're fine. We just have a long weekend coming up right now.
No. I'm going to go away with the boys for a biking trip. No, but I think it works too because, or it worked at the time because I genuinely think he's the smartest person I've ever met.
I could date. I could never date a comedian, I think, unless I thought they were actually very funny.
The funniest,
I couldn't fake it because it is my field and it's something that means a lot to me.
Right.
So I would feel like I would be unfortunately honest in a relationship where I'd be like, actually, babe, I don't know if
I
that
just
was
don't
that
think you're that
be.
Funny.
Yeah, no, that's
like
true.
You're hot.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. Hey,
you're a great cook.
Yeah. And now my wife, who I think is absolutely hilarious, is not a comedian.
Right.
If she's a comedian, I'd be like, babe, that joke actually, if you put the predicate, like,
right, right.
And all of a sudden I've ruined our relationship. And it's like, my wife works in marketing, so she does trailers and stuff. And I was cutting together a trailer of something I was working on. And she was like, can I give you a couple of notes? And I was like, ooh, we've come to that point. Yeah. Yes, you can, but tread lightly.
Yes, be very careful.
Yeah, be very, yeah. God help you if we disagree on a note here, because I know neither of us are going to back down.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think you really have to have that respect when you're both doing the same kind of thing. I'm very careful not to write anything now, like not even a post-it note.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
How was that being parents as scientists? I know now we have other titles. We're moms and dads and husbands and wives and writers and scientists. But is there any sort of like the conversations where like I'm worried about so-and-so's cognitive, like things that would happen on like a higher level?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, sure. I think the hardest time was when we were pregnant with the first one, because you spend all this time in biology studying what goes wrong.
Oh.
And now you have this little incubation and like there's no data. You don't know how things are going. You're like, oh, this could go wrong.
Yeah, you know too much.
It's hard.
It's like
making sausage.
Yeah, you don't want to know.
Yeah.
And when Owen was our first child was born, he was very badly jaundiced. And so I made the mistake of going to Google and looking at like what jaundice does to the body. And it basically can have adverse effects for the basal ganglia, which is the portion of the brain that I did my PhD on.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, first of all, totally hormonal because I just had a baby. But now I'm like, my baby's going to have a movement disorder. I was just freaking out, you know. And I mean, I think there are times where you can know too much. But I also feel like we have the benefit in the way, because getting your PhD in science really takes a lot of structure and motivation. And so we have learned that you have to be organized about your work and you have to really like be dedicated to school. And I think that we're teaching our kids that. So I feel like in some ways it's been good. Like they're learning the discipline from us.
That's actually funny. It's something I didn't hear a lot. I talked to only a couple of scientists so far for the show, but something you don't hear a lot about is everyone makes these assumptions about scientists that they're so smart, and they are often, but everyone just is like, oh yeah, they're geniuses. It's like, well, the geniuses worked really hard at research.
Well, there's a bell-shaped curve everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I got my PhD in a program with, there were some real special guys there, you know, too.
That terrifies me.
They just have to, but I really do feel like that is a misconception about scientists. Scientists, by and large, are not smarter than the general population, I would not say. There are a lot of people who are...
Well, like someone just recently said that to me, something was like, you know, there are dumb doctors. And I was like meaning like medical doctors.
And we don't want to know that.
Oh, that's terrifying. I don't want to know that.
I know.
I just want to assume they're really smarter than me. He's like, my friend is like, well, relative to your peers, you're probably, you know, in the top percentile of your friends.
Right.
This guy could be in the lower percentile of his friends. It's like, no, I don't want to know that. I just want to assume he's a doctor. He knows more.
Totally.
And that makes me so like, and that's nerve wracking to imagine is like, second guessing someone's intelligence level that's in charge of you in some capacity. Oh, that's terrifying. My mom was a nurse growing up too, so the know too much thing was very specific in our household. You know, it's like my leg hurts. She's like, could be polio. Hold on, sit down. You know, you're like, no. I mean, I fell skateboarding. She's like, fell skateboarding. It could be a twisted fracture of your tibia. I was like, Mom, please, I don't want to know any of this
stuff.
It's
just a skin knee. I shouldn't have said anything.
I know. Well, we literally stopped like telling my mom we were sick, and then that's like has a weirder effect where you're like, I mean, I've had a fever for like 3 days. It's like, don't tell Mom. We don't want to get into it. It's like, wait, what if you really sick? We'd be like, Dad, I think I have a headache. He's like, all right, go get Tylenol. Quiet. We don't want to alert Mom. We'll have us like lay bed rest for 6 days out of fear. Yeah. What's the progression in the science world? A lot of people, while they're getting their doctorate or doing research, but where does that go from there? Like, or at least what do you aspire to do in that world?
That's a great question. Well,
and it can go different ways. There's sort of a, you know, at some point in your career, there's a big split between like, you know, am I going to go into academia? So, you know, research at a university, something like that.
Which usually comes along with teaching as well or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I found usually the progression is, just to like back up, is you get your bachelor's degree, you go into graduate school, you can get a master's along the way. Some people leave with a terminal master's. But usually you just go through to your PhD, and then most people have to do a postdoctoral research fellowship or something at this point now, and then they can go into professorship.
She's really mostly just hazing.
Yeah, or they can go into industry. And what I found after my postdoc was...
And so postdoc's like an internship would be for...
It's like you have your PhD, you're more independent in the lab, but you're still working under a professor.
Oh, okay.
So you're working in someone else's lab. You usually leave the lab that you've done your PhD in. It's a good idea to do that, though not everybody does.
Right.
And you have your own project, and you're working a lot more independently than you would be under somebody as getting your PhD. But after my postdoc, I left and I went into industry, and I found that the research there was far more rigorous than it had been in academia.
Yeah. Well, the end point,
because you have
different.
To be right. You have shareholders.
Right.
It's going into the clinic.
It goes into patients. You're going to find out if you're right or not.
And that was a shock to me.
Oh, that's really cool. And is industry like looked at by the other scientist people as like the selling out, because you're taking a paycheck versus...
I think that's changing, but certainly it was that case.
Yeah.
Just a couple more questions about the science world, because the way you guys were talking about industry versus academia really interested me. Is there like a cush science job that everyone is like, because like I know like in TV, if you're like, imagine you just had your own HBO show. That's the premiere. And is there something that people aspire to? It's like, oh, once you're in a think tank, you're making six figures just spitballing ideas.
Yeah, I think being a consultant is like, it can be good, but you also kind of have to like get your own connection. So like you can't be a consultant nowadays really until you've done the earlier work where you've like
people know who you are.
Yeah, and you've proven yourself in like a lot of different circles. So I feel like more clinicians, like medical doctors, have the cush jobs where they like get their MD and they've worked for a little while. MDs. And then basically they, you know, can be a consultant for a drug company and make, you know. But those rules are like more strict now too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it might be a little bit harder.
Eventually you get out of the lab, but then like the stress level just goes up.
Right. Because you're doing stuff that's less and less like actual science.
Well, that's what's
right?
so right. weird too, is that we're trained to be scientists. We're trained at the bench, but then like your goal is to eventually not be at the bench anymore, but we're not trained for any of that. Like we're all trained
we're
how to like.
We're selected for that.
Yeah.
You move up because you're good at the bench. Doesn't mean you're good at managing people.
Managers are very different. Some are really weird and quiet and quirky, and some are much more people. But I think in science, you're going to get more managers that are a little awkward socially and kind of they're not as good at that. Whereas in business, people who go to get their MBA, in general, the people who are in those management positions are the ones who are also good with people.
Yeah, well, they don't let you out of the basement, I think, unless you are.
In science, you're like, all right, who's the most outgoing guy? It's like, well, this is a world's tallest midget competition here. It's like, Keith is the only one that makes eye contact. So it's like, oh, well, he's the CEO, you know? He's the face of the company. He's the one willing to shake hands with a stranger despite being a parasitologist.
Right.
So, because I always dreamed, my dream job, anytime you see it in the movie Armageddon and you see it in Martian, whenever a group of people come together and like, let's think outside the box how to solve this problem. Like, this is, you know, maybe a little bit on a down note, but in post 9/11, they like created this group of think tank, and David Fincher, the film director, was brought on to like, to come up with ideas of ways that we could be. I'm like, that's such insane. Like, I'd love to be in a room where David Fincher, two scientists, two terrorist experts, two aviation experts are all bringing the highest caliber of thought from their respective field. I would love to sit down with, like, you know, all right, we got two scientists, two social, and we're going to solve these problems. That just seems, whoops, I'm just smashed my microphone. I'm so Italian, I can't even talk on a podcast without moving my hands. I'm smashing everything over. We're just like, we hear a light whirring in the background, like a helicopter blade. Gabriel's gesticulating constantly. Are there movies that when you were like, that scientists really love? Like, I feel like I just rewatched, since I started doing this podcast again, since I saw the film The Martian, I went back and rewatched Contact.
I love that book and that movie.
Yeah, so I was about to say, The Martian is like solving problems, it's just problem solving, which is what science is. So I feel like it was so exciting.
It was awesome. And the thing is, he's so fascinating because he's a computer guy. He's not like
the guy who wrote the book.
Yeah. Andy Weir. So he's not a like earth scientist. He's not a botanist. He's not a chemist. He's a computer tech guy. And he learned all of that from Google. Like, he basically wrote this book using like the internet for research. And
that's so awesome.
And it's out there, and that's what's so cool, you know? And so we really did. I tore through that book. He read it, and then we watched the movie. I think scientists seem to enjoy the book a lot more. And I think non-scientists, from my experience,
shattering stereotypes, scientists like the book more.
No, the book, The Martian, more. Right. But like, scientists are sort of geeks at the core. So like, you're a geek, we're geeks. Like, the movies that I have loved throughout time are like Blade Runner. Like, that's not a scientist movie. That's like anybody who's like smart and kind of geeky loves that movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't think of any others where it's like.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I loved MacGyver because, I mean, that's science and probably making a movie and doing a podcast. It's like, got a problem, figure out how to fix a problem.
Well, I think that's the appeal of The Martian, is that it was like genius MacGyver.
Yes.
It
was
like, and hey, I love Richard Dean Anderson, don't get me wrong, but Matt Damon is Matt Damon.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, slightly more compelling of an actor. So you put Matt Damon, Ridley Scott, and MacGyver, the premise of MacGyver together, I'm in,
You're MacGyver, though. He just fixed our kid's Nerf gun last night with super glue and baking soda. Like, what did...
That's so awesome.
It wasn't working, it wasn't shooting, and he came in and was like, I just fixed this gun.
I broke it shooting her like the day after Christmas. And I was like,
and so yesterday our kid was like, yeah, this gun is broken because my dad was shooting my mom.
Hey, can you not say that at school?
So, we had friends over. We're like, it doesn't stop.
It was kind of like biology because I took this thing apart. And, you know, the thing with biology is you're trying to fix something, but you don't know all the rules and you can't take everything apart. And you don't really have the tools you need. So that was me in the dining room table pulling this thing up going, okay, how the heck does this thing work?
So let's imagine this is the mitochondria. Yeah. This is the Golgi body. Yeah.
You know, you pull on this. Ooh, I shouldn't pull on that again. That's not the way to do it.
Which is hard to do in biology. Yeah. Well, that person is effed for life now. Yeah.
But it's like, okay, this spring fell out when I opened it. Where the heck does this thing go? Like, does it go here? No, here. And it was essentially gluing it in place, but I needed to cure the super glue with baking soda to change the pH. And
that's so awesome.
I know, right?
That is so fun.
So he is modern day MacGyver.
That's really cool that like your kid can come to you with a problem with a broken Nerf gun and you're like, all right, well, I'm going to approach this the only way I know how.
They only go to him though.
All right. Yeah. Give me six different colors of lab coat tape. I need a big McDonald's napkin. I'm going to tape it to my chest and get to work.
McDonald's.
And daddy needs another beer.
Because my dad growing up, he worked in television, but like in physical production. So he was like a gaffer and a lighting guy. But anytime anything was wrong in the house that was like lighting related or electricity related, it was really fun to watch your father do.
Yeah.
Where he would be like on a ladder with like one of those, like my dad carried like those knives that you could just open with one hand and like do this shit. And I'm like, my dad's like, pass me this. And he's got like, and everything is tape. Now that I work in production, I understand how important gaff tape is.
Yeah.
But like, give me a piece of gaff. And I knew that when I was 12, because in our house we had gaff tape was on everything. He's like, gaff tape. But like literally, like I would be the only kid on the football field who's like shoulder pads were like gaff taped on, like everything was like taped on, like my waistband was like taped on. I was like, my dad fixes everything with tape on his job. I guess he just brings it home. Now you're using the pH of baking soda to lower.
that's true.
That's so fun. So let's talk a little bit about what you guys do for fun. I'm assuming we're all humans. We have the overlap, the Venn diagram of things we enjoy are similar. But I'm just curious, what do you guys do for fun?
Well, when I was doing science full time, I wrote fan fiction for fun. That was my hobby. I wrote Alias fanfic. I wrote some Twilight fanfic. I wrote Harry Potter fanfic. I had Buffy fanfic. I had fanfic for all different fandoms.
Oh, that's awesome. So this is the first time something that's come up as a vocab word on the podcast that I don't think I need to explain. Like normally with interviewing scientists, I'm like, oh, so let's talk a little bit about what biochem is, but with the listener base of Earwolf and who they are, when you say fanfic, that's something that everyone can latch onto. Yeah.
And for her that grew, it was like, you know, she'd come home and be working a little bit, and you know, she used to go to bed early and I'd stay up late, and I'd be like going to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and she's like writing away. I'm like, wow, what's going on?
It just turned into, and then that's sort of when the books took off. So what used to be my hobby is now my career, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic. It's also pretty fun that you're like, I have a doctor in science, but this is what I do.
Yeah, but now this is what I do. Yeah. But I feel like I use it every day because I am really disciplined about my schedule. And I feel like that's one thing people are like, well, don't you feel like you wasted your PhD? It's like, not at all, because I use those skills all the time. You know, it's made me a lot more like structured and motivated.
Yeah,
and
it teaches you some humility as well. It's like working in science, like you are reminded every day that you don't know everything.
Here's something that I can get on board with. Try going out every single day to an audition and them going, no, you're not good enough for what we want right now. And that's not the way to take it, because you need to move on. And also, I think for you too, and I'm just speaking on behalf of your own emotions at this point, but like coming at it from doing it as a hobby first, like you're not like, this is what I gotta do for a living.
Well, now it's all gravy,
right?
And it's like, all awesome.
When you were doing it at first, you were doing it just for the love of it. You weren't doing it to like, I hope this works,
right?
Yeah. Which is like, I think, always want the job, never need the job. Yeah. It's kind of like that mentality.
And you got through some of that tough phase kind of early on. It's like before you were published, you had people like praising your books and eviscerating them too.
Right.
So you got to get, you know, beat up a little bit and learn.
And I still had a full-time job.
Right,
so our
right,
family
yeah.
wasn't depending on me getting some books sold or anything. And what was really great too is, so Keith's hobbies are mountain biking and homebrewing, and he is excellent.
I need to get someone to pay me for that.
He is excellent at both of these, but we each had our own things that were really important to us. Mine was the writing and his is the brewing and the biking. And so when I did get serious about writing the books, he kind of understood that this was something really important to me because he had those things too.
Right.
You know,
that's so.
So that has never been strife or weird or hard or anything.
Yeah, it was
like we negotiated that very easily.
Back then, it was like a night of the week. You know, I would watch the kids, and you would go write, and then I had a the end of the week where I'd go ride mountain bikes and then drink some beer.
Yeah.
I think she
I align a lot with your hobbies. Yeah. Despite I'm trying to be a writer in real life, my hobby's more involved. And riding bike also sounds exhausting. I'm more into just the drinking of beers. All right, being honest here.
I love
I'm
watching the Tour de France, so. Yeah.
I have some homebrew in the fridge. I can bring it out.
And I will certainly. I only have an hour drive back. I can have. I'm 300 pounds. I can have several beers and be fine. All right, this is awesome because home brewing is like cooking an art and a science.
So you need totally. To hear how geeky he is about
that's
this
what I
and
hear.
What
that's
he so. Has built for his brewing. Yeah, you have to tell them
so
about
and,
it.
So, and brewing is definitely one of those things that like you can really, again, it's all those things, and you can really approach it from the art side and get great results. And yeah. You can also really approach it from the science side and I think also get great results. So. For me, it's a lot of fun because you can do it simply and make great beer, or you can totally geek out in a completely unnecessary way.
And he does it that way.
Yeah. And have like, you know, computer controlled process controls for temperature. And
that you can check on your phone.
Be in a
when
different country and check on your fermentation temperature in your garage and shut your refrigerator on and off. And,
that's so awesome. I've never actually, I've met a lot of people at being a, you know, 30-something former Brooklyn, current Los Angeles hipster. I've met a lot of home brewers over my life, but never a home brewer that approached it so scientifically.
Yeah,
well, there's a lot
thing.
Of people who do it that way.
Yeah. But, I know.
And you don't have to. It's just fun.
Well, that's a great marriage of your two worlds. Like, that's so, like, for me, that's why I drink while I perform. That's my marriage of my two worlds.
I drink while I write. So
yeah.
It's
yeah. But you can do some science-y stuff without, like, a 95% failure rate. So
you haven't even told him what the name of your setup is.
Oh, yeah. I got to know. I'm going to ask a lot of questions here. So let's get into it. I'm into home brewing as well.
Okay, great. Yeah. So I started out making this thing that could sort of maintain the temperature during the mash for home brewing, which is to... do a layman term for that. That's where you basically take the starch that's in that grain and turn it into the sugar that gets turned into the good stuff.
Yeah.
By the
that's
yeast.
The alcohol. Yeah.
And if you're brewing with grain, that sort of temperature is really critical. And it's, I could go for hours.
Yeah,
it's the enzymes that control it. But anyway, I made this like really ugly bodged together thing from a tool stand that I'd like hacked and then bolted a burner on and then had this control thing. And it was kind of R2-D2 shaped, and one of the guy I used to brew with said, oh, you should call it R2-D brew. And then that really stuck. So.
Star Wars and puns.
So it's R2-D brew.
Keith, you're speaking almost directly into my left ventricle right now, by the way. Or maybe I should say my liver.
You guys are having a moment.
Yeah. I'm like, this is so exciting. I think cooking is a lot for, like that for a lot of people too. Like you have your friends, like my wife's idea of cooking is, because she's very aesthetic and everything is like, you know, design in her mind. So her food is like beautiful and thematic. And my food is like always like meat by quantity, more or less. Like, I'm like, I made 11 pounds of chicken wings. It's like, what? Like, that's like my idea of like really enjoying cooking. Like, and I feel like that's so fun to see people approach all that stuff in a different. So what kind of brews are your either favorite to make or what do you think you've really got down the best?
I have a porter. I have some actually in the fridge.
You'll get some of that.
I'm a huge porter fan.
It's like a recipe I've been working on for like years, and I went and visited Fuller's Brewery when I was in London. With her, I got to tag along on one of her book trips. So, and
that's
while
awesome.
She was signing books,
Fuller's
like,
ESB is one of my favorite sessions.
So I was like, I'm taking the tube to Chiswick and going to Fuller's, which if you get the chance, is the best brewery tour I've ever been in on my life.
He was so awesome. Cute though. We had an event at the Apple Store there. And so he and my co-author's husband came in, and they were tanked, and they were so like smiley and adorable. They were like the most supportive giddy husbands at a book event ever.
So it was the husband of your co-author too.
Yeah, so I dragged him with me. Yeah, I was like, let's go.
So you were working on the porter recipe for years.
Yeah, so I like found out which yeast that I can buy here is actually like from their brewery, so I like threw that in because I love their porter. And,
they do have a fantastic porter.
They do. So I've been playing around with different yeasts for that one for a couple of years.
I'm sitting here trying to come up with real life applications of neuroscience that I could use for myself, but something I'd never thought of taking from scientists outside of the content until Lauren brought it up is the work ethic, and when Keith, you're talking about it with brewing, of just like, I can just look at it from approaching things scientifically. Like you said, you're, and with parenting, you even said it prepared you. So can we talk a little bit about how, and I'm at the age where, you know, my wife and I, we pulled the goalie. We're seeing what happens here. how is science brought into parenting from you guys, from your point of view? Did you guys do things where you're like, I wonder if non-scientists do this or civilians. I don't know what sometimes us comedians call non-comics civilians.
I think it's more about people who are like, who have been very rigid, like academically. That's the thing I wonder sometimes is like, are people as structured in terms of like how they make their children do their homework or whatever. But I think one thing we've learned is that we can't try a discipline thing once, and if it doesn't work, we don't try it again because we know you have to get a good N. Like, you have to get a good sampling. So,
you got to accept some failure.
We accept some failure as scientists, and we also, like, make sure we try things a number of times before we, like, toss it out.
Right. Like, so, like, a specific example, if you have one, or, like, hypothetical, like, that would be, like...
Like, how to deal with tantrums, right? You know, you don't just say, well, we can't yell because that one time we yelled, blah, blah, blah. Or you can't be calm because the one time we were calm, they flipped out. So we've learned that, like, you really have to, like, go with your, you know, the best hypothesis and stick with it and then throw it out if it seems, like, over several trials.
Right, but be willing to say, you know what, we're screwing this up.
But it does also tell us, like... being scientists, I think it's taught us as parents that there are some things we're just going to do wrong.
So, for example, like, we dealt with this tantrum by trying to ice our child out, by just ignore it, let it quiet. Right. And then it's like, I picture you guys like at a dry erase board.
Little
you're like,
data
but,
sheet, yes.
But it looks like he had sugar 1 hour earlier, so it could have been sugar. Okay, let's do it again. And let's try icing them out in a non-sugar situation. Okay, well, both of us were in the room. He tried to play both of us against each other. It's like, Keith, I was alone today. Control, you know, soundproof room.
Yeah, we have this chocolate hypothesis. It's not backed up by the literature, but we're pretty sure it's right.
I mean, when we give our son any amount of chocolate, he is a maniac. Yeah.
It's like gremlins when they fed them after midnight.
So that's one that we're not doing so scientifically. We're pretty much just like George W. Bushing it, deciding that it's fact. So, but yeah.
Say no to chocolate.
Say no to chocolate.
Well, the last this time piece of chocolate here was found 15 feet away from the White House door.
Last time he had chocolate, he tried to kill my daddy.
Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. So this is how it works in the comedy podcasting world is like you guys plug some stuff because that's why you would do this normally. That's the other part about getting scientists on the podcast is like, it's like, no, I have work to do. It's like, but you could tell people about your research. They're like, that doesn't affect my research.
Yeah.
For us, it's like, my name's John Gabers. Check out my website. Come to my live shows. Wasn't I fun? Like, but in this case, Lauren, we have something we can. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your books.
I write with a co-author. Her name is Christina. So we write under Christina Lauren. And we write saucy romance, like mainstream romance, and also teen fiction.
So Christina Lauren, is there like a website or just go to
ChristinaLaurenBooks.com. And we're on Amazon. You can find us at Target, Barnes & Noble. We wrote a book called Sublime, which was an idea that came to me when I was doing research still. That story is about a boy who goes, he basically uses hypothermia as an extreme sport to have near-death experiences. And that's not science, by the way. That's not a thing that we can do. But it was an idea that we stretched from science. And so
that's awesome. That's like a modern look at Flatliners.
Yeah,
like,
Yeah. It's like Flatliners meets Ghost is how they pitched it.
Oh,
definitely a kids don't do this at home sort of deal.
Yeah.
That's funny. I can't believe of all those books, only one is like science-based. There's no like...
Well, we do have
characters.
We have scientist characters in a lot of our books.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of... In one of our books, Beautiful Player, there's the guy is a scientist, and there's a lot of inside jokes from him from grad school and from us from grad school.
Oh,
so we got
fun
to throw those in.
What about you, Keith? Where can we buy R2-D Brew?
Yeah. Well, buy her books, and I can start the brewery.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Keith's like, I'd like to use this opportunity to plug my wife's books even more. Because I'd like to spend a lot of money on my little garage out there.
Yeah, but seriously.
Keith, is there anything that you want to plug? I know we're not going to talk about our place of work too much.
Unfortunately, like legally can't.
So what Keith would like to say is
redacted.
Sign an NDA and he'll tell you about his job. Find him at the top.
As long as you're not, do you have any prescribing medical doctors listening to your podcast?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I'm assuming none. Be quiet.
based on my fan base, they're mostly young shitheads. But hopefully they turn
around. I could probably say whatever I want.
Hopefully they turn around and get into some science. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time
to talk
to me.
This was super fun.
This was a lot of fun for me, too. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Great. Thanks.
Oh, man. What an awesome interview. I want to be friends with these two. I hope they don't mind if I keep contacting them about hanging out and drinking their awesome beer. Now, I was contemplating getting into beer brewing, but I'm going to be honest here. Keith intimidated me. His beer was really good, but he had to work hard to get there. Not in my system, working hard. I'm sorry. But they did teach me a couple of things about how science can help with parenting. Now, eventually, if I stop smoking weed in Speedos and hot tubs and I become unsterile and I'm able to have a child, I will use these scientific methods that I learned from them to help raise my children. Also, something that came up in this interview, you heard us talking about The Martian. Now, I love that movie, The Martian. I guess I found out it was also a book. And in the movie The Martian, I learned what the acronym JPL stands for. It stands for Jet Propulsion Laboratory. It's like a division of NASA or something. Well, here's the kicker, folks. I'm going there next. On the next episode of The Layman, I'm heading out to NASA's JPL to discuss space travel. Thanks again to my guests, Dr. Keith and Dr. Laura, for taking the time out of their busy day raising two children to talk to a giant child about science. Thanks again to my producer, Eric Martin. The Layman is a Hal original and a production of Midroll Media.
This is Tony Rodriguez.
This is Carlos Santos.
This is Raiza Licea.
And this is Oscar Montoya.
When our powers combine, we are
Spanish Aquí Presents.
We have a brand new podcast here on Earwolf, bringing you the best of the best of lo mejor of the Latinx comedy.
Join us every Tuesday as we chat about what's going on in our lives, Latinx culture, and qué es lo que?
Lo que nos está picando.
Lo que te pica. Don't worry, we'll tell you what that means if you listen.
We'll also be joined by a new guest every single week. We'll get to know a little bit more about their lives.
Every single week.
Uh-huh. And then we'll make them sit back and watch us improvise their lives right back to them.
Improvisation. Spanish Aquí Presents premieres July 16th. Subscribe now in Stitcher,
Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you listen.
O donde sea.
Spanish Aquí Presents.